Hello. In this video, we're going to talk about structure, so structuring your presentation. And I'm going to introduce you to the pivot model, which is a model that I've adapted from some earlier work on learning. And we're going to go through that process about how we got to that stage, because it's a really, really useful process. It's a really useful structure to put into anything, because if you don't have a structure to a presentation, then people don't understand what it is you're talking about. They don't know where you're going. So it's really important to have that structure in your head. So the pivot model can help you to structure any sort of presentation that you're going to want to use. So whether that is a formal presentation, whether it's just a conversation where you're pitching for somebody unexpectedly, like a networking event or something. So I think you'll find this really useful. But in the meantime, I'm going to talk about one of the most basic structures that you've probably heard about before. You know, when people talk about presenting and presentation skills, they often say, well, you need to tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you've told them. So there's that same message three times. And that's a very familiar structure. I mean, it's a structure that you see in news programs, for instance. So they'll start off with the main points of the news, then they'll give you all the detail. So they've told you what you're going to tell you. They've told you. And then at the end, they summarize and say, and here's the main points of the news again. And there's a really strong reason for doing it in that way. And that's why it works. And it's been talked about so much in terms of presentations and presentation structure. So what I'd like you to do is you may need to pause the video for a second. Not yet. Wait till I've told you what I want you to do. Get a pen and the paper. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read out a whole load of words. And I want you to listen to all of those words. And when I've finished talking, and not before, when I've finished talking, write down all of the words you can remember. Okay? So I'm going to read a load of words out. And then what I want you to do is to, at the end of me reading them all out, is start writing down all the words that you can remember. And then we'll see how well you did in a few seconds. Okay, so you might want to pause the video now. And so here we go. If you're ready, you've got a pen and some paper. I'm going to read some words out. I want you to listen to the words. Don't write anything down until I've finished, and then write down the ones you can remember. So if you're ready to go, door, table, grass, spoon, chair, path, television, knife, window, Zulu, flowers, sofa, cup, gate, radio, plate, carpet, path, plate. Okay, so now what I want you to do is write down all the ones you can remember. Okay, so you've written some down. Maybe you've written a lot down. Maybe you haven't written quite so many down. But what I want to do now is just show you all of the words, and you can score yourself against those and all the ones that you got right. So here we go. So we've got door, table, grass, spoon, chair, path, television, knife, window, Zulu, flowers, sofa, cup, gate, radio, plate, carpet, path, plate again. Okay, so how many did you get right? Did you get all of them? Did you get some of them? Were there some of them that you found easier to remember than others, for instance? And so what I want to do is to explain why that is. Generally, what happens is that people remember some. Very few people, if any, have remembered all of them. So let's have a look at why that happens. Okay, so this is down to a thing called primacy and recency. And if you think about the way that you remember things, we could draw a graph here that kind of goes a little bit like this. And what I imagine happened there, because it's what happens most of the time with most people, is that you remembered quite a few at the start of the process. So, you know, if you look at that list of words, you could probably remember the first few, and then it kind of tailed off a bit, and then maybe you remembered the ones at the end as well. So we tend to remember the things that we see first and the things that we see latest, the most recent things. So if that's your pattern, then that's brilliant. I imagine also, because what typically happens is that in the middle of that, where, you know, where you're kind of forgetting most of the words, if something like Zulu, I imagine that, well, generally what happens is that most people remember Zulu. So in the middle of all of those, they remember the first things, they remember the last things, and they remember Zulu. Why do they remember Zulu? Well, Zulu is very different. You know, if you think about the set of words there, they're all very similar. You know, door, table, grass, spoon. They're all about, you know, houses and gardens and things. But then we've got Zulu that stands out as being different because it's completely unrelated to anything else. So that's how people remember the things that stand out. So from a presentation point of view, this is the reason why the news programs are set up in that way. So you've got the primacy bit of the here's the headlines, here's the new headlines, and you've got the recency bit at the end, which is the here's the main points of the news again. And you're quite likely to forget the stuff in between, unless two things. One is it's really important to you. So you might have remembered some of the words in there because they were important to you, something that you're really interested in. So if you're interested in gardening, you might have remembered flowers and grass and so on. If you are interested in something specific like technology, you might remember television and radio, that even though they're in the middle of that kind of forgetting zone, if you like, you remember them because they're important to you. You might also remember plate because plate was in there twice. So if things are repeated, you tend to be able to remember them as well. So what we're saying here is people remember the first thing you say, the last thing you say, something that really stands out because it's different or it's important. And one of the ways that I highlight things in my presentations is by saying, this is really important. And so it's almost like the Zulu in the middle there because it stands out. You might repeat things so that people remember them. You might, at the start of the presentation, you know, highlight something that's going to be really important to people as well. So we need to think about, it's not just enough to do tell them what you've told them. We need to think about how we can overcome that lag in the middle. Similarly, if you're presenting for an interview, for example, and the interviewers are seeing lots of people presenting, because I guess that's what happens, then they'll remember the first one and the last one. And if anybody stands out in the middle, they'll remember you. So you need to find a way to be different, to stand out without kind of switching people off, obviously. So what is it that makes you the Zulu, or what is it in your presentation that you can make a Zulu? So if you think about it in those terms, you can use that structure quite effectively. What I want to do is to move on to introduce you to a different structure that I think is really, really effective in terms of if what you're trying to achieve in your presentation is to convince somebody, to sell to somebody, to influence, to pass information on, to help people learn something, this is a really, really effective way of putting it together. So I'm going to take you through the process of some learning kind of theory that helps to underpin and help you understand where this structure comes from and how it really works. So first of all, I want to introduce you to Kolb's learning cycle. And Kolb said that people learn by experience. So we learn by doing something, but it's not enough just to have an experience, because, you know, you might have heard, or it might happen to you, that you keep finding yourself getting the same experience time after time after time. So you get the same things wrong. So just having that experience isn't enough to learn something. So what you do need to do is to do something with that experience. And Kolb said that what you need to do is reflect. So you have an experience, and then you need to reflect on what that experience was and what it meant to you. Once you've reflected and you've got that information in your head, you need to put some theory around it to understand why it happened and what happens and how it fits into the rest of your experiences generally. Once you've got a theory to it, it gives you the opportunity and you need to experiment doing something different. And what that does is it leads to a new experience. So although he calls it a learning cycle, I tend to think of it more as a spiral, like a spring, because, you know, experience reflects theory, experiment leads to a different experience. And you go around that cycle again. And that's what kind of learning is all about. It's not just about learning from one experience. It's about continually learning. So let's give you an example. Let's imagine that there's a toddler who's just learning to walk, and he's in his living room, and he sees across the other side of the room his favorite teddy. So off he goes to go and get his teddy. So he's got his eyes fixed on the teddy, and he doesn't see the toy train on the floor, and so he trips over the train. And so he's had an experience. It's quite a painful experience, but it's an experience. So sitting there, rubbing his head and reflecting, he thinks, what happened then? Well, I was looking across the room and I just tripped over something. So what do I need to think about? So then he'll put a theory around it, which says, okay, so because I wasn't looking, I tripped over something. So maybe what I need to do is to look down at the floor when I'm walking across the room, and I can avoid things that are on the floor. So that's what he does. He experiments. So he then sets off across the room. He looks down at the floor. He sees the toy on the floor, steps to one side to avoid the train on the floor, carries on looking down at the floor, and bangs his head on a table because he hasn't been looking up. Another experience. So this is that second part of the learning. So sitting there and reflecting on that, he's thinking, God, this walking lot's a bit harder than I thought, isn't it? You know, maybe it's not enough just to look down at the floor, because then I bang my head on the table. So theory, maybe what I need to do is to look down at the floor and look up. And I probably need to look from side to side as well, because my brother's always running around, you know, and I might run into him. So experiment, set off across the room again. Looking down at the floor, avoids the train, looks up, ducks under the table, gets to the other side of the table, looks left, looks right, steps back as his brother runs past, walks across the room, grabs his teddy. So a successful learning cycle. And Kolb says this is how we learn everything. We have to go through those four stages. We have to experience. We have to reflect. We have to theorize. We have to experiment. But we can join that cycle anywhere. So if your presentation is about helping somebody learn something, then we can join that cycle at any point in it. We can get people to think, so we can join it at reflect. We can give them some theory first. We can give them the opportunity to go away and practice it, and we can give them an experience. Or we can start at experience, or we can start anywhere, as long as we go all the way around. So as long as your presentation goes all the way around those cycles. But some of us have a preference. Some of us prefer to learn in one style rather than the other. So some of us perhaps prefer to have experiences or prefer to have theories. And Honey and Mumford came up with this idea of learning preference, and they called it learning styles. And you can find out your own learning preference by, you know, looking on their website, Honey and Mumford Learning Styles Questionnaire, and going through it. So this is what it looks like. So Hoodie and Mumford's learning styles basically uses the same cycle and says that, you know, some people are activists, so they are learning by experience. They love to jump in with both feet and get on with it, whereas some people like to sit back and think about it. So they're natural reflectors. Some people really need the theory, so they're very much about theorists in terms of their learning style. And some people are pragmatists, so they like to experiment. They like to be logical. They like to take things on and try them out. So whichever your learning style preference is, as an audience member in a presentation, then you're going to want to hear information in that way. So if I'm a reflector, I want you to force me to reflect. I want you to give me the opportunity to reflect on things. If I'm a theorist, I want the theory. If I'm a pragmatist, I want chance to kind of try things out. Tell me something and let me try it out. And if I'm an activist, just let me get behind the wheel and drive. You know, I don't care about anything else. So again, from a learning point of view, if the purpose of your presentation is around education and learning transfer, then we need to think about putting opportunities in there for people to reflect, asking people to theorize, giving people theory, giving people the opportunity to try things out. And if we don't do that, then people tend to switch off. So we need to kind of grab people's audience, the audience's attention by covering each of these areas. And there is a way of pulling all of these together in a really, really effective way of structuring a training. And then we'll talk about presentation as well. And this is Bernice McCarthy's format model for learning, and accepting that building on Honey and Mumford's learning styles. So we've got the activist, reflector, theorist and pragmatist in this model as well. And her approach is a process, essentially, and a process of asking questions. And so the first question is why? So why are we here from a presentation point of view? Why do we want to talk about this? Why is this important? And that takes us from activist and experience into reflection. So it's like, you know, this is your experience in life. This is why we need to talk about it. We then talk about what. Okay, so this is why. So we've given the opportunity to experience something and think about it. So what are we going to do about it? So what's the content? So this is the moving from thinking about it into the theory. So answering that question, what? And then we've got how. So, okay, so from a theory, how do we apply that theory? So how do we move from theorist to pragmatist? And that moves us around that next part of the model. And then finally, we've got what if. And the point about what if is this is the motivation to change. So, you know, if you did this, let's try it out. And what if we applied this at work? Or what if we applied it in a particular situation? And the model goes into more detail about whether you should be coaching in it in one part of it, or using a questioning style, or whether you should be giving information and so on. But as we're, you know, primarily focusing on presenting information here rather than learning, rather than it being a course, you know, delivering a course, then we're not going to go into that kind of detail with it. But those four questions are really, really important. And I've kind of taken that because I think that a lot of presentations aren't necessarily about learning and changing behavior. They're really about influencing and selling and giving information and informing and communication and so on. And entertaining, obviously, don't forget entertaining. So what I've done is kind of stretched that out and made it more of a linear process, because I think presentations are much more linear. So let's have a look at what I call the pivot model. The pivot model starts with a small what. The small what is, what am I going to talk about today? So that's just about the kind of headlines, if you like, the news headlines. So this is what we're going to talk about here. This is the content, essentially, in a very, very brief overview. And the point about this is it gets people focused on the content. So it just brings people's mind into what we're going to hear about today. The next step is why. So why are we here? Why are we here talking about presentation skills? So this is about motivating people to listen. And I would always use a kind of a more negative why in here. So let's say, for example, well, the reason I'm here today is to talk to you about the problems you're having with individual performance within your teams, and what effect that's having on the bottom line, and the profitability is suffering as a result of that. So that's a real kind of attention grabber in terms of, well, okay, so why do I need to listen to you? This is why. The next stage is the what. So the what is the content. The what is the, what am I going to do to help you with that? So what approaches am I going to use to helping you improve the performance of the people within your team? So that's when you introduce your content, your models, your approach, whatever it is that you're selling in this sense. And then the how. So how do we do it? How do we work with you? How do we put all of this stuff into practice? And then finally, the what if. So what if we did this? What if we did work with your teams and your leaders? And, you know, we developed a kind of partly online, partly offline course program that people could access, and we put some coaching in and so on. What if we did that and it improved people's performance within the organization, and that had the knock-on effects of improving profitability? Would that be interesting to you? So the point about the what if is that that's the motivation to do something. So that's the towards motivation, as we call it. That's the goal. That's the thing that's going to really sell. Because although we talk about all the different purposes of presentation, I believe that in almost every case, what we're doing is selling. We might not be selling a product or a service, which is what I do quite a lot of the time, but what we might be doing is selling a point of view or a behavioral change or a call to action to do something. So I believe we're selling all the time. So having that, this is why we need to change at the front end, the why am I here talking to you, and the what if we did this that we say we're going to do and it had a benefit to your organization or to your team or to you, would you be interested? Well, of course they're going to be interested. So that means they're more likely to take on board what it is you've spoken about. So the small what focuses people on the content. The why gets people motivated to listen to the content. The what and the how is the information, is the core that you want people to buy. And the what if is the motivation for them to buy it once you've encapsulated all of that stuff. And that's the bit that's really important, because often people don't close a presentation off. So they'll start and they'll give you information and then they'll say, and that's it, are there any questions? And then you've lost that opportunity to close in that sense and think, oh yeah, people actually do want us to do something. Or, yeah, that sounds really good. I'm going to do that when I get back to work. So it's a very simple process, but I think it's really, really effective. And I've not come across any presentation yet that you can't structure in that way. And whether that is a multi-million pound pitch for some business, or whether it's introducing yourself at a networking event, you can put your presentation, your pitch, your information into that structure really quickly, really effectively. You just need to practice it and think about it. So have a go. Have a go at putting any of your presentations into that structure. I think you'll find it really, really helpful. It's logical and it works.